for members only. Golf Smarter number 178 for May 12, 2009.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Your questions answered by custom club maker Dan Sachs.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome. And if you are an early adopter to Golf Smarter for members only, then you've probably already received your Dixon Earth golf balls. Michael Hamill of Calgary, Canada did and sent me his review of the balls the first time he went out and played them. I've shared his comments on the blog at golfsmarter.com and encourage you to also send me your thoughts to post on the blog. Hopefully you like the balls as much as Michael and I did. And I will post them all. Just to let you know, we're very close to launching our Golfers Mart shopping section, and we'll be selling the Dixon Earth golf balls with the Golf Smarter logo. They'll be priced competitively, but our members will have this exclusive offer. Buy two boxes and get the third for free. That changes the box pricing from like a Pro V1 to an NXT. It's a great deal for what I think is a great ball. Well, I haven't played golf in a month, which is driving me crazy. And to make matters worse, the airlines have given up looking and are sending me a check for about 55 to 60% of my claim. But luckily, doing the podcast has had some benefits. I've gotten some generous help from a couple of people that I've interviewed and should have the golf part of my loss in place pretty much soon. Now, today's guest, Dan Sachs of Bay Area Custom Golf, has been working with me to get all my specs and fittings so that I know exactly what I want to order. I've decided that I'd rather get the right irons than getting a discount or free on some of this stuff, which I have been getting. So instead of making my clubs from scratch, Dan's a believer that the major manufacturers do some pretty good work and they have some great products out there and thinks that the Mizuno irons that I was previously using are the right clubs for me. Dan has become very skilled and savvy about buying used clubs in online auctions, then customizing the shaft, grip, length, and loft based on my specs and his client's specs. But today, he's going to tackle many questions that have been sent in by listeners to both Golf Smarter, Golf Smarter Tips, and even some older ones from Golf Better. But before I got into the first question, I wanted to get deeper into something he said multiple times in our previous podcast.
You keep talking about hitting it in the center of the face.
It helps.
Right. But is that the charge of the club maker, fitter, or the instructor? Or obviously the golfer. It's the golfer. But who's going to help him the most? Who's going to help that golfer the most achieve hitting in the center of the club face?
The golfer.
What external help can the golfer get to assure that he's going to be consistent with that?
Oh, lessons are great. Lessons are huge. I'm not a golf instructor. I advocate finding a good one. And good again is a relative term. You've got to find somebody first and foremost that you can communicate ideas with, who understands where you're coming from and where you're trying to go. And when that person communicates ideas to you, you understand what they're saying. There's 10,000 ways to say one thing, and the best thing about any instructor, the greatest instructors I've ever known are people that are extremely good communicators. And in being a custom club fitter and club builder, that's a big part of my job too, is making sure that the ideas are communicated so that the person will understand. And sometimes it takes two or three ways of saying the same thing. Something else that you have to get really good at if you intend to really help people. You have to find 10 different ways to say one thing. Because one person will hear something and it doesn't sink in, but we use a lot of analogies, which are always good, to find a way for somebody to relate, their experiences to what you're trying to do for them. And, I think communication's key. As far as who's going to help you hit it in the center of the face, you, the golfer. The golfer is their own best friend and or worst enemy out there. if you can hit it in the center of the face, or shall we say the sweet spot, if you can hit in the sweet spot, more often than not, you're going to find that's where your true ball flight tendencies lie. I've worked with a lot of guys and girls who hit the ball off the center of the face, and they've been doing it for a long, long time. And it could be that the golf club is not behaving correctly, and they're not, it could be a setup issue. It could be a golf club issue. It could be a golf swing issue. It could just be a thought process issue. Maybe they're not sure where they need to hit it on the face. Golf club's moving very, very fast. And the golf swing moves very, very fast. I'd say on average, right around 1 second from address to impact. So that's a pretty quick second. But as all golfers know, it's also a very long duration of time as well. There's a lot of thoughts that can be had in that second. But at that speed, you need to keep checking back. I'm a huge advocate of things like face tape, loft and lie tape, making sure that you know what you're feeling. That's another very difficult thing, is to communicate feel to somebody. How does something feel? Because everybody approaches feel differently. You read all these books by all these great golfers, and talking, what they're describing is they're describing the way they feel and what these feelings equate to in words, in a verbal sense. It's so key to be able to try to communicate feel. It's a very difficult thing to do. I'm not sure if that really...
Yeah, no. And you're absolutely right. It really is. I'm going to rattle off some quick questions here.
Fire away.
Okay. This one came from Chris Baradinis.
What's up, Chris?
He's in Mainville, Ohio. Have you been through there? You know Mainville, Ohio?
I'm not sure if I know Mainville,
okay.
But
well, it doesn't
spent
matter.
A little
he
time
says,
in Ohio.
Chris says, help! I love my Cleveland CG14 wedges, but I really need the lie adjusted flat. The ones they replaced are 3 degrees flatter. I've been unable to find a club fitter who is willing to bend these, and Cleveland's website has no mention of adjustment on it. Can they be adjusted?
Send them. I'll bend them.
That's a quick
I didn't
answer.
Mean for that to rhyme, but yeah, absolutely. 3 degrees, no problem. You just have to, you as the player, have to accept the potential for that club to break. And it happens, but I'd say more often than not, you should be able to get 3 degrees out of CG14.
Okay.
I can get 3 degrees out of CG14. You just got to make sure you're doing it slowly.
I got a note from somebody in the UK who said that he had some pings that he owns, had somebody, a custom club fitter, look at the lie on all these off-the-shelf clubs that he bought, and that his, I think I've got this right, his 9-iron was at 43.5, and his pitching wedge was at 46.
Degrees of loft.
Mm-hmm. It's like, is that a big oops? Is that a big mistake? I mean,
that's a little bit close.
Close, yeah. That's not where it should be, should it?
No, you're looking for about a 4 degree separation there. And I think if you were to go to that website, you would probably see about a 4 degree separation there. But not uncommon for those things to happen. It's another advantage to having a guy locally that can work on golf clubs. The problem with that certain situation, actually, Fred, is that ping golf clubs are notoriously difficult to bend. They actually have a different method of bending golf clubs to loft and lie specifications at the ping factory. It's called concussion bending. And what they do is they put the golf club in a jig, and you'll notice pings have a notch on the back of the hosel. And what that notch is, so you can set the golf club in this jig, and they hit it with a, for lack of a better term, a hammer, until it reaches, there's a chart sitting underneath the jig that says, you know, what the lie angle is. So they'll hit it with a hammer until it reaches that angle.
Wow.
But sometimes golf clubs will bend back. Metal is a strange thing. It will want to reform to its original shape sometimes. Sometimes beating golf clubs into the ground will make them bend. But yeah, not uncommon. A lot of people come to me and they say, well, I hit my 7 and my 8-iron the same distance, and we'll check the lofts, and sure enough, they'll be very, very close to each other. So it makes perfect sense that they are hitting their 7 and their 8-iron the same distance, because it's almost the same golf club.
Interesting. Chris Brandy, Los Angeles, California, says, what's the difference between cutting down a driver shaft from the butt end versus the tip end?
When you cut it down from the butt end, you are not going to affect the flex of that golf club as much were you to cut it down from the tip end. So we work with a lot with shaft frequency here, resonant shaft frequency. And when we're trying to achieve a certain flex, we're going to be cutting from the tip end and measuring, of course, you know, from the butt end, what the frequency of that golf club is. And the I want to say the general rule of thumb, which changes for every shaft, which just makes this such a dynamic thing. The rule of thumb is for every inch you're going to pull off the tip of a shaft, it's about 8 cycles a minute. And for every inch you pull off the butt end of the shaft, it may be about 4. So my biggest concern when cutting golf clubs down is, are they going to maintain swing weight? And it could be that you need to get a little lead tape. And what was this person's name?
This is Chris out of Los Angeles.
Chris, cutting a golf club from the tip end is considerably more expensive than cutting it from the butt, because the golf club has to be disassembled. And once you start disassembling golf clubs, I'm not a big advocate of disassembling golf clubs to make them shorter. It's just easier to cut it from the butt end and then reweight it to a certain swing weight.
He also wants to know, is choking down on the shaft similar to cutting it?
Yeah, from a feel perspective. Yeah. If you grip down lower, I don't like to use the word choking down, cause choking golf don't jive very well for me, but I like to use the term grip down. If you're gripping down on a golf club, it's going to feel a little bit lighter than were you at the, end of the shaft. Now, that has an effect on lie angle, swing weight, and flex to a certain extent, because once you grip down on a golf club, you're bringing it closer to you, which will effectively flatten the lie angle. It will also make the golf club feel a little bit lighter because, again, it's not as long. So I always try to use the analogy of if you have a fishing rod with a 1 ounce lure at the end of it and you twang it up and down, it's going to have not as much flexion as the same rod with a 2 ounce lure at the end of it. It's going to have a lot more flexion with that 2 ounce lure. So you want to make sure that, actually, let's get back to Chris. Mm-hmm. Are you hitting at the center of the face, Chris?
It's
a good question.
There you go.
A lot of modern drivers are real long, which make them move faster. The golf club that's longer is going to move faster because there's a bigger arc. And you can generate more speed, but at the compromise of what?
Right. Now, we've had Tom LeShawn on the show numerous times.
Brilliant individual.
Yeah, that's why he's been on numerous times, because he's so, so interesting and so knowledgeable.
I'm a big fan of Tom's work.
Oh, well, as are we. And he advocates shorter shafts on drivers. He thinks that the shafts are too long. Your thoughts?
He's right. Shafts. I'm not going to say they're too long because I'm not sure who we're talking about.
Okay.
If we're talking about a golfer that hits it in the center of the face at any length, yeah, give him a long driver. You know, if we're talking about a golfer that needs lots of distance and has a ton of control, yeah, he can take a long driver. He, she can take a long driver. But all things being equal, a shorter golf club is easier to control. It's much easier to hit a 9 iron than it is to hit a 2 iron. No question.
Yep. Okay. Here's one from Cody Hack.
What's up, Cody?
He's in Pennsylvania, and he wants to know if there are any tips for storing his clubs during the winter.
Ooh, good question. I would just say a cool, dry place.
Not in the trunk of his car, out in the street.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania.
The epoxy that's used to put golf clubs together can be temperature sensitive. If it gets too cold or too hot, it can start to break down and sort of compromise the bond between the shaft and the head. So you want to make sure that they're kept at even temperatures. I would say, you know, the basement. A lot of people have good basements in the northeast there. So, yeah, just someplace that they're not going to experience extreme temperatures.
Okay, but what about any kind of special cleaners and stuff for the off season? You can clean up the clubs before you store them. Anything necessary on that? That's going to help their condition and keep them in good shape.
I would imagine you're coming off the 18th green. They should be pretty clean. I'm a huge advocate of making sure your golf clubs are clean. There's grooves there. When you fill them with mud, they don't work as well as when the grooves are not filled with mud. So
And the different kind of brushes that we have for the, for our clubs.
Sure.
Is there some we should be looking out for or avoiding? I mean,
I don't think so. Golf clubs are pretty tough.
Okay.
The metal's pretty tough. Yeah. Some of the finishes on some of the finishes on golf clubs can be sort of scarred by those brushes, but they can be scarred up pretty good by the sand in the bunker as well.
But residue from balls, residue from grass, mud, that's the, get that stuff out of the grooves.
Clean them up. Yeah. Make sure they're clean.
On before you hit the ball. I mean, throughout your round, carry something with you and clean it up.
Yeah. If you think about you watch golf on television, you see people on the tour, or the caddies always got a rag with one end is usually wet, the other end is usually dry, so they can make sure that every golf club in that player's bag is nice and clean. Not only does it work better aesthetically, when you look down on it you don't see the last place you hit a golf ball, but if you do need those grooves to do what they do, which is displace material between the ball and the club, then yeah, get them clean.
Here's another question that kind of falls into the same category. This is from Fred Strain in Fallbrook, California. He says,
Fallbrook. I know Fallbrook.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Do you know Fred?
I don't know if I know Fred. I might have seen him on a driving range somewhere around
he's
there.
He's not going to want to talk to you because I'm embarrassed to tell you how long it's been since I've replaced my grips.
Oh, a lot of people should be embarrassed to tell me that.
I should probably do that annually, at the very least, annually. Lately, it seems as if I'm feeling every little thunk and bump through my shafts to the point where my forearms hurt. Would softer grips help me? And some of the online grip size charts suggest they might need a slightly oversized grip. What is the effect of an oversized and or undersized grip on ball flight?
Lots of questions. Very good question there.
Change your grips regularly. If not,
I don't play as much golf as I used to. Opening up this business and kind of doing what I'm doing, it doesn't give me the opportunity to play as much. But it seems like I changed the grips on my wedges, which are clubs that I use a lot. I'd say if anything, I practice my short game about 90% of the time now, rather than 70% of the time. I change the grips on my wedges every 3 to 4 months.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I have unfettered access, Fred.
Cheap labor.
Cheap labor and, kind of unfettered access to golf clubs and grips. But, I think at least once a year, if there's one thing that I could point out that most golfers are neglecting out there, it's their grips. And this is the connection between the player and the club. So it's absolutely the most one of the most important things to work with are new grips. There's so many grips out there. It's downright confusing to an experienced club fitter sometimes what all these grips are doing. You know, you spend a lot of time researching all these products to make sure that you're up to snuff on everything. And grips are a necessity for good golf. There's a lot of tour players out there change their grips every week. Wow. These are a lot of guys that hit a lot of golf balls, though.
Yeah,
from how much do you use them? Well, certainly, you want to change the tires before they're completely out of tread.
Yeah, right.
And I would say getting your grips changed at least once a year is huge. I would also advocate trying new grips. Take your 7-iron and have a couple of grips thrown on it. If you got a savvy club builder, he can save the old grip in some cases. So you could theoretically try 10 grips in 10 days and not have to lose any money other than that you bought 10 different grips to try to decide which one's the best for you. With regard to the size of the grip,
that makes
a big difference. A grip that is smaller will help aid in the releasing of the golf club. A grip that is larger will help to hinder the releasing of the golf club. So when we say release, we're talking about the head turning over. If you play grips that are too large, you may develop an excessive handsy move to try to get those things to release. And if you're playing grips that are too small, you might develop a hold off move that can keep that club from releasing a little bit more. Not so dramatic that it's going to make the end all. It's going to make another new set of grips is going to change your golf game. But I try a lot of grips through the course of a year. I will try things to see how they feel to me. There's things like ribbed grips that have a rib running down the bottom of them to help you they call it a reminder to help you keep placing your hands in the same place every time. A lot of people seem to like those. Grips come in all different shapes. And a lot of different sizes. And there's also, if you've got somebody who's building on your golf clubs and knows what they're doing, they can beef up the grips by using more tape underneath between the shaft and the grip. So when I was with Cleveland, we did a lot of extra wraps for people, and we're all along just learning. See what happened when you put a three or four more wraps underneath the grip and brought it up to kind of a mid-size level, or you could put more wraps under the right hand to decrease the taper of a grip, so it kind of hinders release a little bit more too if you get somebody who really releases it aggressively. But yeah, to every golfer out there, get your grips checked, get them looked at, get them changed, try new ones. They're always launching new grips. There's a lot of great stuff out there. Find something that feels comfortable in your hand. Of course, that's job one, is does it feel good to you, and stick with it, and but not for too long.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. There's been a lot of changes in technology. At least this is what the manufacturers are leading us to believe, that there's been a lot of changes in technology over the last few years, with the larger heads and the high MOI and COR and all these things are thrown out at us. From your perspective, what's the big difference between the clubs that came out in 07 and the clubs that came out in 08? Other than the name or an extra letter in the name of the club.
The biggest difference?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Are they changing from year to year?
You want to put me on the spot for
this?
Oh,
you bet I want to put you on the spot.
Well, the USGA regulations on golf clubs haven't changed. So a golf club can only be so big with a face that is so hot or has a high coefficient of restitution, as it's known. A golf club can only have so high a moment of inertia, which seems to be the newest of buzz terms out there. If you are in need of, if you're playing with a golf club that is, how about this? If you're playing with a golf club that's more than 7 years old, you're missing out on some really great things. If you're playing with a golf club that is less than 4 years old, it could be there's a better golf club out for you that's new. But it's probably not because the ball's coming off the face any faster, or the head size is any larger, or the moment of inertia is that much higher. After all, the goal is to hit it in the middle of the face. And if you do hit it in the sweet spot or center of the face, and you're getting max ball speed off the center of the face, then, you know, you're there. What are the other launch conditions? What's the launch? What's the spin? Golf clubs are not all equal. They, even the modern golf clubs, they are not all equal. Some of them lend themselves to high launch, high spin, low launch, low spin, low launch, high spin, high launch, low spin. It really varies from head to head, and that has more to do with the shape than it does to do with the parameters of the specifications of the club, when it comes to moment of inertia, coefficient of restitution, and size. So if you're playing one of my favorite drivers of all time, the Cleveland Composite Crown driver, a pretty popular driver out there. I'm sure a lot of your listeners might have it in their bag. If you're playing a comp and you're hitting the center of the face and you're getting good numbers, then odds are if you were to come to me, I might not even touch it.
So if you're playing with a four-year-old X, whatever that means, X, and then but there's a two-year-old or a brand new XY, it really may not be that much difference. And if it's working for the X is working for you, you're saying you advocate to stay with it, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of times when I won't touch somebody's driver. Mm-hmm. I'll put them on the launch monitor. We'll take a look at the numbers. They're hitting it in the sweet spot. They're getting great launch conditions. And they'll say, you know, what more is out there for me? And I'll say, well, you know, if you were to swing the golf club a little bit faster, that would probably help give you more distance. But beyond that, ball's coming off the face as fast as it can.
Yeah.
And once the ball comes off the face as fast as it can, i.e. sweet spot shot, That's about it. Hmm. The kid you referred to at the beginning of the show, Danny, great kid. He was in search of a driver because his driver was it was too soft a shaft with too low a kick point, and at his speed, which developed incredibly quickly, he went from about 105 club head speed, 105 miles an hour, to about 116 in the course of about 8 months. And what he found was that driver was spinning incredibly high for him, and not that the ball flight was so high, but the spin helped to create the lift that brought the ball up, and he was losing lots of yardage to spin. And what he was convinced that he needed was something heavier, stiffer, lower lofted, and, of course, new.
Yeah, but a 40, 50, 60-year-old golfer is not going to be able to increase their club head speed that much as we get older. That's not a simple thing to do.
No, not. It's terribly difficult to increase your club head speed.
Yeah, so you're talking about a 16-year-old. Great, you know, but what about the rest of us? Is what do we do? I mean,
To increase your club head speed?
Well, is that really what we're trying to do? Or are we just trying to hit the ball center and face and be happy with it?
I would advocate hitting fairways before trying to increase your club head speed.
Okay.
I'm a pretty big fan of hitting approach shots from short grass.
Yeah.
That's just me personally.
That's a good call. All right, here's,
I would rather give somebody that goes I would rather give somebody something that goes shorter and is more consistently in the fairway than something that has the greater potential for distance and a greater potential for dispersion. So it gets down to what's really the benefit there? Is it hitting the fairway, or is it hitting the ball 10 yards farther and 20 yards wider in dispersion? And that's a question the golfer has to ask themselves. Everybody's different.
All right, last couple ones here, and then, of course, I'll have 17 more of my own questions. But this one comes from Stan Corpus, and he wants to know, what are your thoughts on the future of the iMix from Callaway and other companies with these exchangeable head shaft combos? He says, my question is that as I page through some of the monthly golf rags, I don't see any of the large companies talking about this as they did about a year ago. Do you think the price point is not within the consumer's price range, or that it was just a bad idea?
No, not at all. I'm a huge fan of these new systems because they help me as a fitter to be able to take one head and put, I guess the number is infinite, the amount of shafts into it. Because that gives me the opportunity to try things that are not otherwise readily available, that would take, you know, hours to build. So I'm a big fan.
But what about for the golfer?
Yeah, as the golfer.
Yeah.
It's difficult. If you're a golfer who's working with someone like me, then we can figure out together through the fitting process and through ball flight analysis what are going to be the best three shafts, or however many shafts are coming with that driver. What are the best three that you can get, and what are the differences, and why would you want those three different shafts? But every time you put a new shaft into the same head, it becomes a different golf club. Effectively, it's going to reach the golf ball with different conditions, and you're going to see some pretty dramatic differences in the launch conditions. So,
what advantage is it to the average golfer who has the different shafts? He has the combinations at home. Should he be messing around with this?
Golfers have sort of forever, from the days of. I guess as soon as they came out with the lead tape product, golfers were able to change their ball flight and move weight around their golf club. The old persimmon golf clubs, most of them would have sort of a heavy sole plate, and then somewhere internally they would put a massive weight to kind of get the weight up to make it feel a certain way, and affect the ball flight a certain way. If you put a lot of weight into the heel of a golf club, it'll want to help it turn over. Put a lot of weight on the toe, it'll want to help it keep from turning over. I think that for the average golfer, it's a better idea to get one club that does something consistently, whatever that something is. Hopefully it's hitting in the center of the face and the center of the fairway. But I think it's better for people to work with the one club and maybe change, you know, every now and again, or try different things. I'm a huge advocate of trying stuff. Even the people that I fit with golf clubs, you know, they'll want more. It's every. It's funny, you know. I'm a pretty big fan of The Simpsons, and there was this great episode where Homer and Monty Burns, who's the head of the nuclear power plant, are trapped in this snow cabin, and Homer says, you know, you're incredibly incredibly wealthy and successful guy, and Monty says, yes, but I would trade it all for just a little more. And I think that's how a lot of golfers feel. You know, you may hit, 13 fairways in a round and you feel like you're not getting enough. You may hit 16 greens in a round and you feel like, I just want to hit those next two, you know, and that's what makes you want to get better. That should be what makes you want to improve. Yeah, I think so.
That even if you're, you know, you always want to be a little bit better.
Sure.
You know, and that's the great frustrations in golf too.
Yeah, but it's not necessarily a club issue all the time. There's a lot of times when the clubs are not the issue.
Well, are we getting to the, it's not the arrow, it's
oh,
the
arrows and the Indians thing, right? You can say that if a set of golf clubs is,
you probably hate hearing that.
I hear it a lot.
Well, I'm sure.
So
you
I've
do,
learned to enjoy hearing it.
Yeah, but
I come up with lots of funny little responses to that.
Of course, because you're the arrow maker.
Right. I make the arrows, and I like to think that I make a pretty good set of arrows for all my guys out there and girls. Don't forget about the girls, the most underfit segment of golfers in the world. They are not taking advantage of all this stuff, and I'm not sure why. I would extend an offer to any of the ladies that are listening to this show right now to please throw an email my way. If you have a question about golf clubs and you feel like the people locally aren't able to answer your questions for whatever reason, you know, let me know. I'd love to help.
Again, click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com and yep. I'll forward it off.
That's
to
where
Dan.
You'll find me.
Yeah. All right. Here's the last one from Northamptonshire, United Kingdom.
Right on. A little UK action going on there.
Ian Dalziel wants to know, what is your view on the recent newspaper article that says some of the new modern drivers like the Ping G10 are so loud when you hit them that they can damage your hearing?
What's that, Fred?
Yeah, exactly. What?
I'm not sure about, I'm not an audiologist, but a good friend of mine's dad is. So maybe I'll ask him exactly what it takes. But I can tell you that I've been on the driving range for the last 6.5 years listening to people hit drivers, and I still hear okay. It was the AC/DC concert that I went to back in 1992 that sort of got my ears jammed up a little bit.
Awesome. All right. Dan Sachs, owner of Bay Area Custom Golf. I really enjoyed this. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a blast.
It's a lot of fun.
I love it. Yeah.
Thanks, buddy.
Sure. That's it.
Dude, that's it. Next week, we're going to announce the winners of our... Yeah, that's it. Sorry. Next week, we'll announce the winners of our Edgewood Tahoe Stay and Play giveaway, plus the day and week-long passes to the American Century Celebrity Golf Championship that also takes place at Edgewood Tahoe. Check your email this weekend because I'll probably contact our winners ahead of time via email to confirm that they can make the trip because I don't want to give it to somebody who's not going to use it. So if you cannot use the trip and you can't make it on those specific dates, or can't afford, whatever the reason that you can't come out to Lake Tahoe on July 20th and 21st, I'll pick another winner and we'll find somebody who can use it and take advantage of the situation and that I can play golf with. Now, as a member, you are automatically entered to win our members-only spots, but you can also increase your chances of winning by clicking the Enter the Contest box at golfsmarter.com once again. Usually, we pick only from unique entries, but members who sign up again will be entered twice. Today's member-only contest winner will receive an autographed copy of the newest book by Tom Coyne called A Course Called Ireland. Tom also wrote the book that was made into a movie called A Gentleman's Game. Congratulations to Jamie Harper, a Golf Smarter member from Kilmarnock. And I hope I'm saying that correctly. Kilmarnock? It's in Scotland. Anyway, Jamie, I hope you enjoy the book, and thanks again for becoming a member. We close with an anonymous quote sent in by longtime listener and member Juan Gutierrez of Tampa, Florida. Now, in an effort to be happier and healthier,
he suggests that you adhere to a golfer's diet. Live on greens as much as possible. Next up, we'll talk to Tom Coyne about the aforementioned book, A Course Called Ireland. I welcome your comments, conversations, suggestions, requests, and quotes. Our Golf Smarter group is on Facebook. My handle on Twitter is Fred Green. You may leave me voicemail on Skype at Fred S. Green, or just send me an email by scrolling over the feedback tab to select Hey Fred at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.